Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. How you doing, Adam?
Doing A-okay, Ben. How about you?
Couldn't be better.
As close as we get to the end of Next Gen, a few people have written in to say what we're going to do next. I think that's a fairly open secret. We're going to do Deep Space Nine next.
Yeah, we're going to do Deep Space Nine next. Man, I am sad to see TNG go.
I have been feeling more and more like that.
Reviewing Deep Space Nine is going to be really interesting because it's like the one that everybody says.
It's the front line of Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to it before I could, Adam.
It was a real race to the punchline there.
Sure. speaking of things that are coming to an end, I only have the handful of packs of cards left, Adam, and I was kind of wondering if you wanted to open a few more cards with me.
That sounds great. Let's do it.
The game is five cards. The game is exceedingly simple. Order this is just the cards, data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
I have six left, and I feel like these are going to be special card dents because of that. But
I've got 12 left.
Fuck.
So I'm going to have to really go without for a long time. Which is a feeling I'm no stranger to.
Oh, man. This is a particular turd of a pack because it has not one but two Deanna Troi's mom cards. It's got Half a Life and Ménage à Trois. Ménage à Trois.
I got relics. Do you have relics? Card number 130. It is just a really fun picture of Montgomery Scott.
Yeah.
His face is the entire thing.
Really captures his essence. I like it.
Yeah.
I also have one for Tin Man.
A classic?
Which has taken the strange approach of just having a picture of the entrepreneur and a Romulan warbird, and then a actual tin robot man, which has nothing to do with the episode.
Let's take all of these episode titles extremely literally. Oh boy, I'm three packs in and nothing.
All right, I got a special on my second pack, Adam.
Gah. What do you got?
I have a comic book cover for a Star Trek The Next Generation comic book called Showdown, Winner Takes All. And it has what looks like Dr. Crusher and Chief O'Brien in a phasery firefight with some kind of lizard men.
I'm on to pack number five. Really closing the gap here, Ben.
Yeah. This is the episode that I've been needing.
Oh, no. Another shutout. Oh, I got Tin Man. You're right. That is a ridiculous card.
I mean, you ask Juan Ortiz to design 170 whatever
cards.
Yeah, I'll give them a break on that.
You're not gonna knock every single one out of the park. And, you know, for the most part, he does great.
Yeah, I mean, his greatness is why we're doing this card bit. Super fun.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I think we're on pack 7 now.
Damn.
Oh, I'm just covered in card wrappers now. So disgusting. Oh, no. Shit. Oh, this is terrible.
Now you know why I don't like gambling, Adam.
All right. I got one. How many packs is that? And on the 8th package, I opened a special gold foil autographed card for Suddenly Human, signed by Juan Ortiz in an embossment.
Nice. Well, it's not bad.
It's not bad at all, but at what cost, Ben? At what cost? I have 4 packs left.
Adam, I have 4 packs left.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll have to go to be continued on the card bit.
This may be outre on my part, but I say whenever we do the card bit next, we just blow our wads and open up the rest of what we've got.
Oh, yeah. We'll do the final 4 next time on The Greatest Generation.
Yeah, but not like the next episode, because that would be... Come on. We still have 20-something episodes of The Greatest Generation, right?
We still have like 20 things of mail to open.
Yeah, and there is like a big queue forming in our email inbox for your P.O. box details. So
yeah,
let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Well, what do you say we get to know Jordy a little bit better as we experience the emptiness of Season 7, Episode 3, Interface.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
This episode starts with a pretty cool sequence where Geordi is, like, crawling around in Jeffrey's tubes, and it's like one of those you kind of, like, don't notice it until you notice it, that he doesn't have the visor on. His eyes are in perfectly good working order. And he's crawling through these Jeffrey tubes through, like, poison gases and stuff. And it seems strange. And then he, like, walks into a room that is 2,000 degrees and physically on fire. And he's, like, reaching through the fire and pulling levers and pushing buttons until he puts the fire out.
Seeing LeVar Burton's eyes here made me think about what a sacrifice it is for an actor, not only in terms of like handicapping himself as an actor, because the eyes are the most expressive part of a face, but seeing his face again in its entirety was nice. He's a good looking man. And to go 7 seasons without showing that on anything that would be on an acting resume, like, it feels like it's asking a lot.
Yeah. I like what they did in First Contact, where they put some, what are those called? They put some like techno contact lenses on him.
Yeah.
So it's like he's got replacement eyes that do what the visor does.
A coworker that I worked with like 10 years ago had those in her eyes, and subtle is not what she was going for. And it was massively distracting to interact with her when she had these things in, and she had them in all the time.
I had an RA in college. I did a study abroad in Dublin, Ireland, and our RA was a guy who had the weirdest accent. It was like German-Irish accent. He was a very nice guy, but at one point it went around that somebody had gone to his room for something fairly late at night, and he had entered the door in a leopard print bathrobe and had cat eye contacts in.
Oh no.
When he opened the door.
When you're an RA, you need to be ready for anything at any time.
You can't have costume based fuck parties when you're an RA.
Yeah, I feel like they should screen for that.
Like, it's totally fine to be somebody that has costume based fuck parties, just you can't be on call during one, you know?
Yeah. So was there like a furry costume in the room or something? Like,
I never
feels like this is a half measure.
I never set foot in this guy's room, but I mean, maybe it was something not furry, but like furry adjacent. So he didn't need a full body costume. Maybe he could just act like a kitty and that was enough.
It would have to be enough when you're an RA. You can't come to a 6-student dorm in a horsey costume fit through the doorway. So it turns out that Geordi is experimenting with a deep, deep future technology known as VR.
And just for the uninitiated, that stands for virtual reality.
I feel like I'm actually here. I mean, there in the Jeffries tube.
Another device they're experimenting with in this lab is a portable communication and computing device called a cellular phone. Ben.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
This is just crazy science fiction.
You mean it could make a call and there's no wires plugged into it at all?
It's pretty neat to see Geordi in the Batman suit, like, experiencing it. Like, no one looks cool doing VR, like, today.
No.
But LeVar Burton looks cool doing VR in this lab, I think mainly because he's wearing a Batman suit while doing it.
Did you listen to the episode of Judge John Hodgman where the guy wanted to build a holodeck in his apartment, in his house?
No.
It was it may have been the first of the like number of episodes that name checked our show on that show. And if you're listening to this show and you don't listen to Judge John Hodgman, like you have your priorities a little out of whack. Judge John Hodgman is great. But this guy, he wanted to get like a super souped up gaming PC and all the VR stuff and then paint his bedroom black and put yellow stripes on the walls. And his wife or girlfriend who had taken him to court was like, no, we're not doing that to the master bedroom in our house.
I'm sure that this guy would think if we were on the jury that we would vote in his favor, but I wouldn't.
No way.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah. I could be conflating it, but I think that he had an unfinished basement in his house that was a totally obvious place to do this in, but he was afraid to go down there because he was worried there might be millipedes or something in there.
Oh, yeah, I did hear this episode. The bug thing.
Yeah.
Those centipedes will fuck you up, man.
Will they? I thought they just crawled around and did nothing.
No, I think they bite you bad.
Huh. That's interesting. I've never seen one.
And when those 100 legs got you in their grasp and you can't break free. Because centipedes are made of insects, and insects are strong.
Now, everybody knows it's impossible to wedge a Jaws joke into any old joke, but what this podcast presupposes is maybe it's not.
Oh, man, you just incepted that hat.
I put a hat under the hat.
Yeah, that's what you did. Oh, my God. I'm so scared for us right now.
Yeah, I don't know how we get out of here.
And so they're doing a fair amount of like explaining to a character in order to explain to a viewer what the rules of the episode are. Riker in this case plays the dumb.
It looks like this is going to work.
Yeah,
he's like, so what's Geordi wearing and what's he doing? And Beverly is like, well, here's the thing.
Yeah, Riker walks in and he's like, why is that nerd dressed like Batman?
They're like, we can't just have him wear the goggles because we need him to be able to feel tactile sensations. Riker's like, great, can I borrow this suit and go into Holodeck 4? I've got my own experiments to run.
Tactile sensations, you say?
So I'm wondering if part of the suit there's like sort of a flashlight-looking sleeve component.
A special silicone part on the end that's molded to look like a wormhole or, say... it's interesting that Riker is the dumb in this, because he then winds up being guy who is in charge of the probe the entire time.
Yeah.
What they're doing is, like, Geordi in this suit is being fed information from a remote probe that they can send down and do an away mission in a non-life-threatening way. It's like, it's sort of the Predator drone of Starfleet away mission technologies.
Sure.
He gets in the VR Batman suit and clamps this thing around his visor inputs, and he sees, feels, smells, tastes, and touches everything that the probe can. And they're preparing it for a rescue mission. There's a ship that has gone missing in the atmosphere of a gas giant planet, and this probe they think they can send in without, you know, risking the lives of any of the crew, and see if they can salvage the ship and possibly even save the lives of the crew of the ship.
If I were to tell you that we were going to make a Star Trek The Next Generation episode wherein Geordi is the virtual operator of a probe, how much of that probe would you bet that we would show in that episode?
Right, they never...
Fair amount, at least, right? But in this episode, you only get a reflected look at it. You only get a look at it through a computer screen.
Yeah.
Like, there's always some obstruction to seeing it fully, and it made me wonder if they had an incomplete comp of it, or they hadn't finished the model, or maybe they just weren't proud of it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's, I mean, like, what I wondered about is, like, the last time we had a practical effect of something floating in space, it was
an exocomp.
Exactly. And it looked weird and bad. And,
yeah.
And I wonder if they kind of learned their lesson from that and said, like, let us kind of play, and I think the decision they make here is the right one. Like, the probe, when he looks at his reflection as probe, looks really cool and it's kind of tantalizing, but it does, like, there's nothing about seeing it float down a hallway that will add to that, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. Obscuring it can only do it a favor, because when they did not obscure the exocomp, it was to its detriment.
Right. Almost everything is to an exocomp's detriment, though.
I wonder if they ever gave any thought to making the probe an exocomp.
It's like being John Malkovich, Star Trek TNG edition.
Well, they're doing so many callbacks in season 7. Why not?
Being John Exocomp.
Yeah. If you're playing the exocomp drinking game, you're now drunk.
Adam, I'm drinking some mezcal, so I will take a couple of exocomp drinks in honor of the drinking game.
So this has all been a practice run for the big game, right?
Right. Yeah, they're like pulling into orbit of this gas giant when we come back from title sequence, and they're getting ready to go. And Picard gets called away. He gets called away to his ready room. He's got an admiral on the line.
Hello, Marcus.
Jean-Luc.
This admiral calls without sending a text first, and that would really annoy me. I don't like calls that I'm not expecting.
Man.
Maybe that's a fairly recent development for me, but geez.
Adam, do you identify as a millennial or as a Gen X, or is there something in between those two?
I identify myself as a Gen X. I don't believe I am a millennium.
I am... I
was born in 79, if that matters technically.
Well, I think, our friend Jesse Thorne is the voice of the millennial generation, and he's a little bit older than me, so I must fall within the millennium parameters, if that's the case. I totally associate the screening a call with a text move as a millennium move. I'm surprised to hear that coming from a Gen Xer like yourself.
Yeah, that is one way where I maintain a very youthful carriage about myself.
Yeah.
Keeps me young, Ben.
Yeah, it keeps you young. You're very young seeming, Adam.
So hip.
You're lithe, you're vivacious.
So knowledgeable about the trends.
Nobody could mistake you for an old.
Yeah.
You're so full of piss and vinegar.
A delicious salad dressing of piss and vinegar. That's me.
We were out of olive oil.
Put that on my greens. I blew a friend's mind one day by making honey mustard dressing for him.
Whoa.
I was like, oh yeah, let's make some honey mustard for this. This will be awesome. These are the sort of friends that I hang out with. I'll make salads for them.
He was under the impression that honey mustard could only be obtained in pre-mixed format.
And I was like, you know what honey mustard dressing is, right? It's equal parts honey and mustard, and I could watch
every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
He had no idea. Yeah, you want to blow someone's mind? Make them some fresh honey mustard for those greens.
I put honey mustard on fried chicken.
Oh, that's great.
That's good eating.
When you're at a restaurant and the server gives you the list of dressings, is that the one that you go for?
I don't really order salads at restaurants, Adam.
Whoa.
I don't like to waste my money.
Oh, geez. Really?
If the salad comes with the meal, I'm going to eat it. I don't want to pay $12 for it.
Mm.
Seems like too much money for not enough.
You're all about value.
Yeah, like if I go to a barbecue restaurant and they have a situation where it's like you get your meat and your two sides and coleslaw is not an automatic, it pisses me off so much to have to burn one of my sides on coleslaw. Like, I want to assume that the coleslaw is coming.
There's a great barbecue restaurant in South Seattle that I've been going to called Jack's. I'll give them a free plug because that place is great. And me and my buddy Phil have been going there for like a year, and we do that thing where we overorder and overeat, and we never get the salad. We always get meat appetizer and meat dessert. And until this most recent time we went there and saw that they had a meat salad, which was a spicy Caesar salad with brisket on top. And that unlocked the code for me to that restaurant, because now I don't need to go straight home and take a nap. Now I can go on with the rest of my day. Meat salad was the answer, Ben.
Yeah. I think you are wrong about a lot of life choices, Adam.
I'm so glad that we're doing a show where, little by little, you can teach me all the ways that I've been wrong.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's face. Have you got uniform.
We've got this admiral on the FaceTime, and he's unloading some pretty rough news on Picard. The starship Hera has gone missing, and all souls aboard are presumed missing and or dead. What we should say is Geordi's mom is the captain of the starship Hera, and all he could think of is how many times has an admiral had to call her up and say, the entrepreneur has been missing for like 6 months. We have no idea what's going on.
Oh man, that's such a great call. Like, Geordi's mom has gotten 30 of these messages
yeah.
over the last 6 years.
Every time they go in a space butthole or a time loop or something, like, like this has got to be such a routine part of life if you're in Starfleet.
Your personnel file is just a permanent stamp of missing and presumed dead if you're stationed on the entrepreneur. You're totally right. How it must cut both ways.
Like, this is the core of what's wrong with this episode for me, is like, I can get down with a character feeling like their parent was taken away from them too soon, or, you know, like, if she was not the captain of a Starfleet vessel and had, if there was some other explanation for why she's missing, it would read a lot more for me. But like, the whole episode, Geordi is going like, there's probably some crazy space butthole explanation for where the Hera went. And everybody's like, what? What are you talking about? Preposterous. And he's like, that happens to us fucking every week. That's happened to us like 100 times in the last 7 years. For real.
For us, the answer is always butthole. Why don't we just write in pencil, butthole? We can always correct it later. And when Picard has to relay this news to Geordi, there is not the understanding that, you know, what is Starfleet if not a dangerous career where buttholes appear from nowhere and take your ship and crew from you. There is just a complete denial of this information and the possible conclusions that could come from it.
Nobody holds out any hope. Like, the people that met Nagilum hold out no hope for Geordi's mom.
Yeah. But Geordi keeps the candle lit.
The Hera is missing. That's all. Until I hear something different, my mother just might as well have taken the crew on an unscheduled holiday.
Yeah, so they get this mission going, and he's probing around the ship, and it's like, it's more intense than the tests that they did with the probe. Like, he's kind of traveling around the ship, and he believes himself to be, like, physically walking around the ship, and he's looking at, you know, dead bodies all over the place. There are all these like people in their Starfleet science pajamas all over.
There's a fun Iron Man scene where he like conjures a phaser discharge out of his hand.
Yeah, I love that.
You know, like the game that they play with Geordi in the VR as a probe with all of these tools is really interesting.
It's great. I wish we'd gotten a better episode that used this.
Yeah.
Because it is really fun, like, for him to say, like, can you, like, up the tractor beam from the probe? And they make him able to lift a beam that he otherwise wouldn't be able to lift.
Yeah.
You know, just by, like, turning the potentiometer on that part of the probe. Everybody aboard the Raman has bought the farm.
This place is a tomb.
They all, like, tried to hide themselves in the walk-in cooler in the restaurant section of the Raman, thinking that would be the safest place, but they succumbed to there were like hull breaches and the shitty atmosphere from this gas giant got in. Gas giants are super radioactive too, so it makes sense that a hull breach would be a death sentence. And so he's looking at all these dead bodies and he's like, holy shit, there's also a huge fire in here. And he lifts his hands up and we cut back to Geordi in Batman VR costume. And the doctor lifts his hands up to camera.
They're burned.
Like, if there is a burn past third degree, like, these are like seventh degree burns.
This shit is nasty.
Have you ever burned your hand cooking? Like, burned it badly?
Yeah, I've burned myself a couple of times.
God, that shit is so painful.
I usually get the back of the hand, like if I'm like putting something in the oven and I get the back of the hand on like the oven door or something.
I've grabbed a panhandle out of the oven, like just not thinking, and like that big hand blister is the worst. It's so painful. I can't imagine. And looking at Geordi's hands here, he gives out like the I'm in pain scream. But I don't feel like he screams the way that he should if like every nerve in both of his hands has been fried at once, which would be probably one of the worst pains you could feel.
One of the most complicated memories I have from my childhood, Adam.
Seeing your dad's dick.
The second most complicated memory I have from my childhood is that my father took me out to a hamburger restaurant in the Bay Area. And one thing I liked to do when I was a kid, when we went to a hamburger restaurant, is when we would sit down, I would shake up the bottle of Heinz tomato ketchup to get it to get it going. Because everybody knows that ketchup is a non-Newtonian fluid, and it can be a little bit challenging to get out of that glass bottle. And so
did you shake it like jerking off, or did you twist shake it?
like jerking off. So I sat down at the table and we were like, you know, I'm like 8, 9, 10 years old, this memory. And I pick up the bottle and give it a very intense shake, not having checked to see if the lid was secure on it. And I sprayed ketchup all over like 4 people in this restaurant. Simultaneously with this, out of the kitchen come totally blood boiling cries of pain. One of the women working in the kitchen had dropped her wedding ring in the deep fryer and had like thoughtlessly reached in after it. And so we're in this restaurant where everybody in my vicinity is covered in dripping red liquid. And this woman is being carried out by paramedics with this like unbelievable burn on her hand. And it's like,
oh my God,
it's like this crazy memory where it's like, if one or the other had happened, it would have been kind of like, okay, like I pulled a boner move at a restaurant and sprayed a bunch of people with ketchup, or I saw a woman get a very bad injury at a restaurant. But because it's both, it's like, it's this weird water and oil memory where there's kind of like too many feelings and images that kind of like don't resolve to any like one thought. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that memory is all over the map.
I think about it like once a month and I'm just like, what the fuck was that?
That is so much worse than my wedding ring story.
Losing at boogie boarding in Hawaii?
Just a little.
Check your privilege, Adam.
Ben, did you see those series of workplace safety videos that came out in Canada a couple of years ago that were like horrifying in
like
the way that
you described? Oh, like the super graphic, like guy getting his foot run over by a forklift videos?
The one that I was thinking was lady works in a kitchen.
I'm the sous chef here. With any luck, I should be head chef by next year.
And is like talking to camera saying how she's supposed to get married tomorrow, but she's not going to.
Because I'm about to be in a terrible accident.
And she's like carrying a pot of boiling water and slips on oil, on fry oil, and dumps the water on herself. And it's like the last 10 seconds of the 30-second commercial is just her screaming, and they throw to black and a title that says, like, you know, workplace safety isn't something to ignore. Like, it's like a 30-second horror movie.
Yeah, the scene in Terminator 2 where he tosses the guy on the cooktop is very hard for me to watch.
Oof. Man. This has been Restaurant Safety Cast.
This has been Upset All the Listeners Cast. Everybody is just sitting in their car on their way to work going like, oh, God, oh, why do I listen to these idiots? Oh.
Right now there's someone sitting in a parked car outside of a restaurant they're supposed to be working at, and they just like throw the car in reverse.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
So there is a tension throughout the rest of this episode, the tension of Geordi believing his mother is alive while everyone else believes her to be dead. And that is a tension that appears between Geordi and the rest of the crew primarily. Like,
yeah,
it's sort of like the crew not believing Kalis is real and Worf being the only one who rides for Kalis. Geordi is riding for his mom and everyone else is sort of rolling their eyes every time Geordi brings her up.
Yeah, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but like one of the things that Geordi encounters in a probe mish is a like his mom just like standing in the middle of a room on this ship going like, you've got to like take the ship lower. So take it lower, Geordi. I really need your help on this one.
And Geordi's mom is like, I'm your mom, Geordi. You should listen to what I'm telling you. Take the ship lower.
Yeah.
She's a little like hollow and robotic.
She's a little bit like maybe she's been stranded on this ship for 7 years and hasn't talked to anybody in a long time.
She's like, Geordi, love me.
They also say that she is the captain of a ship that has a predominantly Vulcan crew.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting to imagine. And I wondered if that sort of factored into how the actress portrayed this character. Mm. Like, do you get a little stiffer if you hang with Vulcans mostly?
Well, in the same way that you probably get a little looser if you're hanging with Nausicaans.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you sort of become the personality of your crew in some way.
Yeah, it's the sort of hair metal to British invasion bell curve of behavioral traits.
I'm looking forward to reading that scientific paper, Ben.
I was just thinking, like, I want to see that series. Like, the series about a crew of mostly Vulcans that get a captain from Earth who, like, you know, just doesn't act like them, you know?
She was captain of the USS Hera, ready for her first command. I'm so excited for my first command, you guys. But her crew is no fun.
Welcome aboard, ma'am.
200 Vulcans on a ship commanded by a human captain. Good grief. Coming this fall, the USS Hera.
Geordi has like a whole bunch of pretty intense conflicts in this episode, one of which is with Counselor Troy, who is like, Geordi, like, everybody thinks your mom is dead other than you. And so what I'm asking you to do is shut up about her being alive and listen to everybody else. Like, you are coming up with totally insane Star Trek writer level plots about how she might still be alive.
He's like, do you even watch this show? Do you know how unlikely it is that she's actually dead?
Like, they have a McLaughlin group if where he's won. Like going through it and Data's like,
it is highly unlikely.
And he's like, yeah, but like, come on, like, this is the show we're on, guys. And they're like, I don't know.
Now I know Starfleet has told me that my mother is dead. But what my theory presupposes is maybe she's not. You know, you get 10 punches at that joke, you get a free one at the end of the series.
What I was going to say is, Geordi's mom's in the water. Space butthole's in the water. Our space butthole. And when those space butthole eyes rolls back, they're like a doll's eyes.
A brown eye.
Oh, dear.
We're talking about anything but the episode, aren't we?
So they basically say, we're going to get the Rocinante back in a way that has nothing to do with going deeper and saving the Hera, which you believe to be on the surface of this planet. And that's just tough tits for you, Geordi. Like, that's how it's going to go. Your theory is interesting, but...
nearly impossible, sir.
This is like an interesting point of inflection here, because I feel like there have been episodes where, like, for example, the episode where it's not the universe, it's the doctor, mm-hmm. or it's not the doctor, it's the universe. Like, she is telling them that people are disappearing from the ship, and they believe her for like most of the episode, absent any evidence.
Yeah.
And Geordi does not get the same treatment here.
No,
it's pretty unfair.
Geordi gets pretty strange treatment from the crew throughout. Like, he gets a lot of hang time with Riker, W/R/T, his ability to do the mission immediately after his mom's presupposed death.
Yeah.
And it's strange how Riker treats him, because it's clear that Riker cares about him professionally in the first scene, and it takes... that
yeah,
second,
like,
scene for us to realize that, like, Riker cares about him personally, but only in the lens of his own grief and what he went through with his own mother.
It is really one of those scenes where it is like, I mean, it's a very tempting thing, especially when you have a massive ego like I do, which is like you're listening to somebody tell you something about something they're struggling with and just compare it to something from your life.
Yeah, exactly.
like, you don't do that, Riker. Like, that's a really dick move. Like, oh yeah, I know what you're going through with your mom. My mom died when I was very young, and so I've thought a lot about this. Like, that's not the right way to support somebody who is dealing with, like, a choice between grieving and trying to make a last-ditch effort to save his mother.
Geordi's relationships with everyone in this episode are a little strange, even with his own parents. I mean, he mentions that he had a chance to hang with his mom a couple weeks ago and didn't take it. And then he talks to his dad a little later. His dad, played by the great Ben Vereen.
Yeah.
And his dad is like, we're going to plan a funeral and stuff. And I guess we're going to have it on Vulcan because all of her crew are Vulcans. And, you know, your family and I are going to have another personal service later. And Geordi's like, whoa, man, like, that's a little soon, don't you think? Made me think, like, how soon after you go missing would you want a funeral, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I've come to learn in becoming a member of my wife's family is that in their tradition, it is, like, very pressing business to get the funeral did. Hmm. Like, it's like, if somebody passes away, the funeral is, like, days from now. Like, if not, like, the next
question.
Day. Yeah, so, like... Which is very far on the other end of the spectrum from what I was used to from my family, which is like, hey, we'll have a celebration of life 6 months later. It'll scatter their ashes in the ocean and then, like, play some jazz music at a local church if we can rent it out or whatever.
Which fate are you now obligated to?
You mean, like, for my own funeral? Gosh, yeah. I hadn't really thought about it.
I mean, I'm clearly going to be involved somehow.
Yeah.
I just want to know what I can do.
You'll work the door, right, buddy?
I'm going to be handing out those pamphlets like those guys in Vegas hand out porn flyers, like tap, tap.
Flick them on your thumb.
Where did they get that door guy? He seems familiar.
He looks like Kyle MacLachlan a little bit.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
So Geordi goes on like a rogue mission to rescue Ma Duke, and he goes down by himself to the cybernetics lab where he's been doing this, and Data catches him and is like, I'm going to help you do this rogue mission. You're my best bud. Strange choice on Data's part, right?
Like, they both sort of discuss how much trouble they're going to get into, but I think Data deep down knows that he's not going to get in any trouble at all.
Yeah. Data can talk his way out of this one. Geordi maybe less so.
The thing that Data loves the most, life-threatening actions. Second most, disobeying orders and going rogue.
Data has a rich history of talking his way out of these types of things.
Yeah.
So they do the rogue mission. They are lowering the ship deeper and deeper into the atmosphere of this gas giant. And it starts to become clear from the bridge that things are not going the way they're supposed to. Like, they're trying to get the ship out. They're trying to save the starship, right? Like, they're like, everybody died, but at least we can save the ship. And now the ship is going too deep for them to be able to do that. As they lower the ship more and more, the story of the mom character starts to kind of crack, and what winds up becoming clear is that she is not, in fact, the, like she's been saying that she's on board the Hera, which is on the surface of the planet, and they've, like, been broadcasting on subspace to get his attention in the probe, and it's in fact true that she is some kind of subspace life form that lives on this planet, and she and her compatriots got stuck on the Rocinante, and they're, you know, like, it's not good for them to be this high in the atmosphere. They want to be on the surface, I guess.
Is there such a thing as a surface on a gas giant planet?
Yeah, I think they have, like, rocky cores.
Yeah? Okay.
Or they're, like, theorized to have them. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
Good enough for me.
The, like... save mom mission turns into a save these intelligent aliens that we just discovered exist mission. And like they, I guess, sacrifice the ship to that end, right? Like they sacrifice this ship that they are trying to salvage.
Yeah, in order for these aliens to live there.
Yeah, and the mortal remains of all the crew on that ship, which seems like it's going to be a tough sell for the families back home, right? Oh yeah, we could have gotten them, but one guy was hallucinating, so we didn't.
Do not reply to this email. This email box does not go anywhere. It's a tough end for all those people. They just got caught up in something they didn't understand. These aliens hitched a ride and then pulled them down to the planet.
Yeah.
Bad news. So the button on the episode is Geordi getting reprimanded by Picard in the ready room.
You disobeyed my direct order. You put yourself in grave danger. I am not happy.
You're dismissed. Oh, by the way, sorry about your mom. I guess we don't see the part where Data gets reprimanded because that doesn't happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, he says, I'll deal with Data separately. Geordi's trying to cover for Data, but
yeah,
we can only assume that Data gets off scot-free, right?
He always does.
That's he's Data's like, way.
He's like both Bo and Luke Duke. And his robot body is the General Lee.
You're not the first person to say it, Adam.
Really?
No, you are.
Okay. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I didn't. I think that this episode misses on a bunch of levels. And, I mean, like I said, I think that there's a lot of things that are really cool about it. I love the suit that Geordi is in. I love the way they kind of jaws with the probe where they never show it, you know, all on screen at once. I think there's a lot of potential in a lot of the premises in this episode, and I think it just kind of stumbles in execution.
For a story as emotional as it is on paper, it was interesting how cold it felt throughout. And I just want to read you this little snippet here, which I found fairly illuminating when discussing matters of whether or not a show has heart. It was during the production of this episode that Ronald D. Moore felt TNG had gone as far as it could be taken. Quote, I think it was a point where we were in the room and we were talking about bringing Geordi's mother in, and we all kind of looked at each other and we were like, this is sad. This is the best we can do. Is this the best we can do? Geordi's mother? It was such a who cares idea that we were just sort of, oh man, this show has got to end. Isn't that fucking awful?
That is awful. Like, And it's especially awful because it shows like how limited television was in this time, you know? Like
to break episode 3 of season 7 and you're already like, well, this show's fucked. How do we even do this?
Like, can you think of a modern TV show that would despair at the idea of learning more about the family life of a character, like one of the main characters?
Yeah, no, not at all.
It's ridiculous that seemed like a pathetic, losery, you know, this is the end kind of moment to them.
I wonder how much of it has to do with Deep Space Nine spooling up across the street. Like,
oh, it's spooled at this point. Like, Deep Space Nine has probably been renewed for season 2 at this point. And
yeah, I mean, but like the excitement that comes from writing a new show and creating for a new show versus a show in its 7th season.
Yeah.
Like, you can't help but compare the excitement in both camps.
I mean, I was reading about how, like, Star Trek Generations, Deep Space Nine, TNG, and the pre-production of Voyager were all happening, like, right at the same time. Which is, like, this crazy, like, couple of months where, like, the most Star Trek ever was happening. I guess if you're if you're locked to the TNG side of things, you've got to be feeling like, well, yeah, the most Star Trek ever is happening, but this is not where all of the excitement and action is. Like, that's all happening in the other rooms.
I think this is the trap, though, in season 7. If you are of the mind that Star Trek is a person or a group of people, and you just feel like you're running out the clock telling people stories instead of pivoting into play-style stories, I think that's where things can go stale, and that's where things clearly have become stale, at least to the people creating the show. It makes me nervous for what we're going to see for the rest of the season, to be honest. I really... Like, reading that made my skin crawl.
Ew. Well, one thing that never goes stale for me, Adam, is Priority One messages. Do you want to see what's in our inbox?
They so frequently make my skin crawl.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Haley. It is for Dan. And it goes like this. I know this will be a little late. Thanks, Raz and Praveen. But happy 30th. Maybe all that trek in college and again in grad school wasn't a waste after all. Since I am not a cards person, I'll just say, like a pack lid, please. You are smart. You are nice. You make us move to New York. Thank you for making us go. It is good. Happy birthday. Love, Haley. I just want to be clear, Haley, that we have made it very clear to the network that if any of our viewers wish to purchase Priority One message for a date in the future that has been camped on by Raz and Plavim, they have the ability to kick Raz and Plavim off of that date. So do not think that all of the Priority One slots are taken by them, because we have empowered them to move stuff around so that we can get actual non-Raz and Plavim messages.
Yeah, I say...
Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah, any moving of a Raz and Plavim is pre-endorsed, so... I mean, but we've been very lucky in moving as many Jumbotron Priority One messages as we have, and we really appreciate all of the efforts from our community and from Raz and Plavim as well.
We certainly don't look a Raz and Plavim horse in the mouth.
Speaking of which, Adam, our next Priority One message is from Claudia, and it's to Plavim.
As if on cue.
Yeah, I mean, how unlikely is it that there would be a Plavim-related situation right around the corner? Here's the message. Thanks for the birthday wishes. Right back at you. The Barry White-esque musical accompaniment felt a little unnecessary and misleading for the viewers of this podcast. I have been and always will be on Team Raz. Whoa! Go back to your patio of shame. P.S. Say hi to your smart, sexy, funny, and amazing wife, Henaviva, of whom you are questionably deserving. Man, Raz's wife comes into the picture.
Coming strong, like from the top rope.
Yeah, that is a... I feel like Plavim is trying to wage a war of attrition, but yeah. when Raz and now Claudia punch back, they punch back so hard.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, the last, like, 5 Plavim P1s kind of got erased by that.
Yeah, you think you got Raz down, and then you got Claudia coming in with a steel chair.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a message of the priority nature, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, and they are just a great, great way to help with the ongoing production of our show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Ben?
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk shimoda! I did, Adam. One thing that we kind of glossed over because we were too busy talking about burning ourselves and shit was that the Batman suit is dangerous to Jordy. Like, the reason he gets burned is that the sensors can overload him and, like, cause a feedback loop. And they, like, they keep pulling him out of this thing when he gets overwhelmed by it. And the doctor has firmly stated her objection to him getting back in it ever. And that is the backdrop of Data deciding to help Jordy go on this suicide mission. And so, and it really is a suicide mission. Like, he could die. And I just really felt like Data was kind of projecting his values onto Jordy in that moment. And for that, Data earned my drunk Shimoda for the episode.
That's a hell of a Shimoda.
How about yourself, Adam?
I am going to go with Jordy. So much of what Shimoda did didn't make any sense. And Jordy has come close to dying over and over again in this VR experiment. He's been burned. And let's just say his mom is down there. Let's say for a moment that Jordy's right and she's alive. Like, would his mom want him to risk his life to go down and save just her? Like, they make the case that Jordy and his mom aren't that close, because if they were, he would have spent time with her when he had the chance to. But because of that, because he didn't choose to do that and they aren't that close, the whole idea of him risking his life for her, I guess, is supposed to come out of some sort of guilt. But that guilt, it just rings as super hollow for me. So, like, there's stuff about Jordy's character and the actions he chooses to take that just don't make sense in context of the episode or his character. And so, I guess for that whole cat basket of reasons, Jordy is my drunk Shimoda.
How do you fit all those reasons in there with your disruptor, Adam?
I know. Hardly enough room for those reasons and a disruptor. You gotta press the reasons down, really squish them in there.
That's it. That basket is real big.
It's super big. It's a picnic basket.
Yarmouk Angelad at Tanagra.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Dharmok, Angela,
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
Next episode is season 7, episode 4, Gambit, part 1. Riker is shocked to find Picard, who has been missing and presumed dead, posing as a mercenary on an alien ship. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
If I remember this episode correctly, does Picard wear basically a vest and a vest only, like an open vest as his costume? I sure hope I'm right about this, but
just,
I think...
It's just vest, chest, dick, legs.
Yeah, he's Pooh-bearing with a vest. Yeah, I recall seeing just a lot of beef stew here. That's the enduring memory. Oh, and isn't Ro Laren a big part of this too? Is she not that?
I thought we had lost Ro, but...
No, I think we're due for the Ro double cross episode, and I don't know if this is it, or maybe I'm thinking it's a different one.
Man, that's exciting. I was getting real bummed out about season 7 with all that shit you were talking about it, Adam. If we have some Ro episodes still in the mix, I'm excited anew.
When you have Ro, you have hope, Ben. That's the political bumper sticker that I'm putting on my car.
Fuck yeah.
Ben, one thing that fills us with hope every episode are our legion of viewers talking about the show, grading our jokes, criticizing our many failures. They do that over on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime. Ben is on there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
That's me.
There's also Facebook pages and groups, a Reddit page all on its own, and also the r/MaximumFun Reddit page.
We owe so much to Dark Materia, who very kindly agreed to grant us permission to use the Picard song as our theme music retroactively after we had already launched our podcast. What a mensch. And we should also thank Adam Ragusa, who has basically a million times now come through in a pinch where we had some idea for a thing that needed music and just said, like, Goose, give us music for free! And he did it.
Yeah.
He's done it. He's done it every time. We really appreciate it. We should thank all of our viewers that support us at MaximumFun.org/donate and everybody that leaves a nice review for us on Apple Podcasts. It's a big help. Helps us get the show in front of more people. With that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that has a magical button pad on its belt that can hurt anybody that it needs to.
Make it so.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.